Christopher Sparrow, and this is the iTech Gear Weekly, recorded today, Sunday, November 14th, 2021, episode number 5, It's Not S Mode. I'm Christopher Sparrow again, the editor-in-chief of itechgear.org, and with me this week, Christopher Gavula, the former contributing editor from Gear Dryer and Pocket Now. What's up, Chris?
It sounds like you're starting by making an S of yourself. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a good thing we go back more than 30 years. Also joining us today, Mr. Joel McLaughlin, former contributing writer from Gear Diary and currently the host of the Linux Link Tech Show and Living in the Shade of the 80s Arcade Podcast. How you doing there, Crash?
Oh, that was bad.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I'm doing okay. If it wasn't for me killing my car, but
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys are okay.
Absolutely.
Really, really glad.
Yes, I am too. Okay.
So welcome, welcome. And last but certainly not least, Mr. Larry McJunkin, former co-owner of Wugnet Publications, the Windows Users Group Network, and president of which computer group out there in Knoxville, Tennessee, Larry?
It's the Teleco Village Computer Users Group, 1,409 people.
Salute.
Pretty good size club.
It is. It is. And I know it keeps you very, very busy, which is one of the reasons why you're so excited, I think, about some of the Windows things that we're going to be talking about today. Most importantly, it looks like Microsoft has thrown its hat into the educational ring. It's come up with something that they're calling the Surface Laptop SE, which is supposed to be a Chromebook styled competitor. Now, is there a market for this thing?
I thought that was what the Go was supposed to be.
The Go is gone, I think.
The Go got up and left.
I think I'm
misunderstanding. I would be interesting.
So
now we have the SE.
Yep.
And the big highlights of the SE are that it does everything via the cloud, kind of like a Chromebook does.
Yeah, it's going to be targeted basically at that same kind of educational Chromebook market. They're really focusing, though, whereas with Chromebook, I know that they're going all the way up through K-12, right? This one, though, I think is focusing directly at K-8, right? The device in and of itself is very much like a Chromebook. Everything's done in the cloud, and you cannot purchase this particular operating system separately. It comes with the gear, and that's it. Larry, you going to say something?
Well, no, I was just going to say there is an element of good to this for those of us who've had to deploy a lot of pieces of hardware to a lot of people in our lives. This thing will come totally configurable to the people. I mean, it's geared just for those people, and they can't put anything on it, take anything off of it. It is what it is for them.
Right. Is there a centralized
That's not a bad thing for a certain demographic.
Nope. And I think that there are going to be certain admin level deployment tools that are going
to be available
for.
Because I know Apple's just sort of pushing some new stuff out in that direction as well. So it's kind of an interesting timing on all of this, that they're all kind of going down this, we'll put out these tools and put out ways to deploy. And
it's called Beat Google at the Google Workspace game.
Yeah, you know,
yeah.
I think you're right. I think you're right. You know, but there are specific differences. But, you know, what exactly is Windows SE versus Windows and S mode? And how is it that this particular operating system is going to benefit the educational market? Anybody? Bueller?
I
just don't want to speculate. That's all. I don't think anybody knows yet.
Basically, S mode though is basically a stripped down of full blown Windows, right?
S mode was very, very much locked down. Larry, you recently had an experience with a machine in S mode, I believe. And I know It's very, very limiting. You can't install anything outside that isn't available in the Windows Store with Windows and S mode.
The only, you can call it an experience. It didn't last very long, but the experience was, in my search for a new laptop, I inadvertently bought one that I didn't mean to buy, and it came with S mode. It was not a cheap machine. It was a Lenovo, but it did come with S mode. And my experience was just blow it off and turn it into Windows 10 Home in about 2 seconds, and it was over with. So that's the extent of my experience.
Right, right. No, I think the biggest issue and problem I think that most people have, they don't necessarily understand the limitations to S mode, and there's very little networking. There's very little customizations that you can do with this thing. You can't install anything that outside of those things that are available in the store. And I think those are the real big bullets as far as what Windows and S mode is.
That would be fine if the store was a little more robust than it is, but
I was trying to download and install Zoom, the client, from zoom.us, and it just didn't work. I was, what is going on? And that was it wouldn't take it.
Yeah, if it's not in the store, it ain't going on the box if it's a Windows and S mode machine.
Does it give you a decent warning that tells you why it's not working?
As far as for Windows and S mode?
Chris, there is. You get a little tutorial pop-up that says the application that you're trying to, I'm paraphrasing, the application you're trying to install is not, you can't do it on this Windows computer.
Got it.
This said, in that 1,409 people that we have in the club out here at Teleco Village, we have a lot of retired people, and about 95% of them don't know their tail from their hands and when it comes to computers. And this is a really good product for them because they can't get in trouble. They can't get a virus. They can't get malware. They can't do anything.
Right.
It's a good thing.
Right. The differences though, between Windows and S mode and Windows 11 SE, and even regular Windows. Windows 11 SE has an even more simplified user face to minimize distraction and keep you focused on those educational elements that the schools or the districts that are going to deploy these devices want you to focus on. There's no Microsoft Store at all for Windows 11 SE. So IT educators can control specifically which apps and tools students download, where they're going to get their software, when updates come in, etc. SE has built-in enhancements to optimize performance on low-cost hardware. So the hardware that uses this particular operating system, the operating system's been specifically tuned for that. All right. And there's no way to upgrade or switch to a Windows 11 from Windows 11 SE, where, you know, you could do that Windows 10 and S mode, right? There's no way to do that here for regular Windows SE, 11 SE machines that have it put on there. It's in SE and that's it, all right? Windows 10 in S mode was built simply to limit applications, all right? Other enhancements were not yet developed. And finally, Windows 11 SE is optimized for institutional use, whereas Windows 10 in S mode was also available to consumers.
Right, so there. So it's on low-end hardware, which I understand, and that optimizes the cost.
Right.
Right.
But what happens, and I think one of you guys brought this up in a sidebar the other day, but it does raise the question, what happens when you get a classroom full of Zoom kids on it? Mm-hmm. I mean, does it hold up to that? That'd be sort of my question.
Well, the if there is...
There's a certain amount of overhead to making that work.
Maybe. All right, maybe. And maybe they might be able to do it through the cloud, through a browser window, right?
Well, they'd be foolish not to make it so, because that's what people are doing right
now.
Agree. During the pandemic, they had to consider this.
I would also agree. I mean, they have, there's got to be some level of, and whether that is specifically Teams or Skype sure. or a version thereof that is specifically tuned.
Well, I know certainly in the corporate space,
I don't know.
You know, the requirement for us all to do meetings and whatnot have caused us all to scramble to upgrade our hardware and add better cameras and add, you know, better microphones and on and on to try to improve the experience. I don't know what you do at the low end of the market when you're trying to just get a lot of devices out to a lot of people, but these people have to communicate with each other.
True.
And that requires a lot of overhead to make that work. So I'm curious to see how those optimizations pan out for them, because maybe they've got it all figured out and they've done that.
It may be. Yep. I haven't heard any news or seen anything specifically related sure. to that up to this point.
I'm sure we'll see more as this thing's out on the market a little bit.
Right. The last thing, though, that I want to make certain that everybody understands is that Windows 11 SE is not available. Either the hardware or the software, obviously, because they're two of those things are tied together. You can't get Windows 11 SE separately. Okay. It is intended for institutional use only, meaning that you're going to have to go ahead and order these in bulk through some sort of a Microsoft sales rep and account, established institutional account. You cannot get the hardware as a consumer, which is very different from the Google Chrome model. You know,
sure.
This Chromebook's flying around all over the doggone place. They are available institutionally, but I can go and buy a Chromebook for, you know, my granddaughter, my grandson, my boys.
Yep.
Whenever I need one, I can go to Best Buy today right now and get one.
You can even make one if you wanted to, because you don't Very have true. To buy one from Google or from any other company that uses it. You can basically download Chromium OS, which is the open source variant,
mm-hmm.
log into Google, and it's the same thing.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And I know that there are instructions that are out there to help you build your own Chromebook if you so wish. So more power to those folks, but Windows 11 SE is not
going to be interesting. Chromium has become kind of ubiquitous in that space, and mostly because of cost, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. But they've done it, and the fact that they've done it is it's going to be a hard nut to crack, you know, to get in there and take some of that space back. It's going to be curious to see how Windows 11 and SE, you know, Windows 11 SE and those devices. I'd be curious to see how they do.
That's a very good point, because I know that a lot of school districts, I mean, nobody really they don't have money to go in and explore the acquisition, right. use and deployment of those kinds of things. So and a lot of those districts, a lot of school districts rely on, you know, folks like us or other popular websites to go ahead and get a hold of those, review those, test out and report on the deployment tools and the performance of the devices and the operating system, those kinds of communication tools like Zoom, or Teams, like we were talking about. They rely on those third parties to go and get it. And
Microsoft's big on setting up, I'll call them cost-free pilots or close to cost-free pilots mm-hmm. to try things out. They've been known to do that in the past. And I've certainly been in corporate environments where they did that just to kind of get a foot in the door. And that may be their strategy this time. It's hard to know. I really don't know what their strategy would be, but it is going to be an interesting thing to get into, but since there are so many, it's already kind of a saturated market. I'm not quite sure where they fit in this yet.
I totally agree. The thing though that bothers me, and I know that Microsoft is now the most valuable company on the planet. They overtook yep. Apple. All right. So I know that they've got the resources available to them to do something like that. My concern is, well, what avenue are they going to go ahead and take to get the word out? How are they going to advertise this? How are they going to go ahead and communicate and say, hey, we deployed, you know, these Windows 11 SE machines against these Chromebooks, against these iPads, against these whatevers, and this is how it all panned out. And isn't Windows 11 SE in there in the hardware just fabulous? I don't know how they're going to go ahead and do that, because you can't get them to review them. You can't buy them, or they aren't available to consumers.
Yeah. And I think the other side of this space too is that it's a predominantly cloud-based product in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important, because one of the things that Microsoft has not done well in is the broader mobile space, with the thin client kind of space, if you will.
Yep.
And this is another way to kind of get in the door. We're looking at a generation that really isn't built on the old kind of desktop model that we're all used to. They didn't grow up on it. They grew up on mobile devices.
Right. Chris, so, you make a really good point there. And to go along with that, even the larger companies like Microsoft, Apple, Google, they need to start thinking, we're running out of frontiers. They got to find somewhere to go, or they're not going to sustain their billion-dollar industries. It's just
trillion, trillion, Larry.
Trillion. I'm sorry. Yeah. Multi-billion.
There you go. And that's a very, very good point. They've got to figure something out.
So this might just be one way of them kind of testing the waters in some of those markets. Maybe that's what they're trying to do here.
Might could be. So moving on, and speaking of other things that are going on with Windows 11 right now, I know Joel and Larry, both of you ran into that issue with the snipping tool.
Among other things, yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you bumped into, Joel.
All right. Well, one of the things that is very, very useful with, especially if you have a Surface Pro device, is to, pull off the stylus and hit that button and then do a screenshot, right? And then you can draw on it, make notations and stuff like that. So one of the things I just tried just in the last week or so is I was trying to do that, and I noticed, hey, it doesn't work. All right. Mm-hmm. In my case, it would let me launch the tool, but then as soon as I told it to take the screenshot, it would basically not do it. All right. Apparently this was a known issue. And since then they have fixed it, and I haven't had it come back. So
not me either.
So and it was affecting snipping tool, and I think other tools as well.
Wasn't this a root certificate related issue, Chris? I think you had mentioned.
I don't know if it was a root certificate, but it was certainly a certificate that was on a number of their accessories and built-in apps, if you will.
Well, Microsoft's big on code signing now, and I think it's what it was, a code signing certificate, I think. But, I don't know. I'm mixed on code signing, because I'm thinking, can't you have something it's signed be malware anyway? So of course you can. Sure. So
there have been a couple of different occasions. One where there was an Apple developer who had actually created an application, was a registered developer, and they had created a malware application specifically to go ahead and start and steal credentials and whatnot out of the app store. Some people had gotten hit and had been able to go ahead and tie it back to a specific app that they had either purchased or had downloaded out of the app store that Apple missed it on, Apple, of course, ended up rectifying the issue. But I think
part of the thing with code signing, it wasn't so much that it stopped them from doing it. It gave you a path to trace back is what it was more
about. That's about it, yeah. It's one of those things. I'm just not convinced that it's actually going to make things better, but whatever.
I just find it interesting that they've never had these kinds of issues before, but then again, they've never been as big on code signing as they are now.
Right. Well, you've heard me say a number of times that a lot of these things that have been added to security in the last few years, it's gotten so complicated and so convoluted that sometimes it's actually worse than not having the security in the first place. It actually gets more in the way than it actually solves the problem.
Right.
So it's the challenge. I mean, it's the challenge of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And this is, and this kind of thing is going to happen from time to time, I guess.
Yep.
I agree. Microsoft is bumping into a number of new problems. It seems, though, that they've also been bumping into what I'm going to consider is the classic Microsoft problem. They appear to be blocking third-party browsers from changing the default in Windows 11. And if this isn't shades of 1997 all over again, I don't know what is. So according to Neowin, Microsoft has blocked a number of third-party browsers from changing the default in Windows 11. Edge Deflector, which is a tool that can be used to go ahead and help out with some of this stuff, can no longer be overridden the issue can no longer be overridden with tools like Edge Deflector, which means that the same implementation is done by Mozilla and its browser Firefox, as well as Brave, which is also Chromium based, will no longer work. So Microsoft is at it again. It's a little bit different than the original Internet Explorer issue back in 1997, wouldn't you say, Larry?
Well, it is, but the times are different now too. I think it's just as atrocious, quite frankly. And I think they're going to pay for this one. I really do. I think you're going to hear from it from a lot of people.
Oh, I think
as soon as they figure it out. I had 5 people so far in the last 3 days call me about it. I didn't even realize it, but when I tried it, nope, it won't work.
Yeah.
Have we seen any kind of statement from Microsoft as to why they felt this step was useful or necessary?
And I think because we haven't even seen some of the big sites get into it yet, like, the Thorod hadn't talked about it. Windows Report hadn't talked about it yet, but I bet in the next day or two they will.
I can't imagine that even from a purely PR standpoint that this is really the right thing that they want to do, unless they had some really strong underlying reason for doing it. But what concerns me is not only this happening, but at the same time I've been reading about complaints about increased kind of call it advertising mishigas coming from Edge as a browser. And it seems to be
oddly, it won't let you change the default browser, but when you go into Edge, it will still let you change your default search engine to the 9 or 10 that come with it. And it doesn't have a problem with that, but no, you can't change the browser. And I'm with you, Chris. I don't have nearly the problem with Edge that a lot of people do, and maybe it's because it's not my primary daily driver. I mean, I'm a Safari guy like you.
Yeah.
But still, it just incenses me that I open up Edge and it's got right on the front page. I'm trying to open one up real quick here because it'll be there. Right on the front page, you get this thing. It says capturing blue, it's got these little white text boxes that pop up in different spots, and they're nothing but Microsoft ads. That's all they are.
Yeah, exactly. On their default page, right? Yeah,
right. It's just, it irks me.
You're like, I already bought the product. Why are you advertising?
Right. Yeah. I have your computer and your operating system. Leave me alone.
And it's also interesting in a time where, as Larry, as you said, you and I are Safari users primarily, and Safari will tell you, how many sites tried to track you, and it'll block this and block that from annoying you. And at the same time, Google is trying to slim down Chrome, which has had a history of becoming very bloated. But they're trying to slim it down. They're trying to do the right thing, and they're trying to improve their security, kind of at least the perception of their security. They're trying to improve all of that. I give them some kudos for trying to do that. And then here we have Edge seemingly to move in almost the opposite direction in some ways. And that's an interesting kind of an interesting strategy, I guess.
You know, honestly, I agree with everything that everybody has said, but I mostly agree. Larry, I think you said it the best. Microsoft's going to pay for this one. All right. I think it's going to bite them in the butt. And I think they're going to go ahead and bump into some of the same.
Well, in 1997, that wouldn't have happened. But now Apple has even realized they can't do stuff like this because the hue and cry gets them right every time.
Yeah. Right.
They've paid dearly, too.
When Edge first came out, the very first version of Edge wasn't very good. And then they went to the Chromium-based Edge. And the Chromium-based Edge was so much, I'm going to call it, more lightweight than Google Chrome. Mm-hmm. I really liked it. And I kind of made it my go-to on Windows when I'm working on a Windows device. It's where I go first. And it's even my second choice on my Apple devices.
I agree.
And I like a lot about it. So if they're doing some things like this, it does give me some pause. But I think overall, in terms of the development, I think that Microsoft has done a very, very good job with Edge as far as just the basic mechanics of the product, as it were.
Yeah.
So I don't like to see them lose the momentum on that. So I'm hoping that's not what they're doing here.
You know what it might very well be? They may have just instigated this and instituted this, and they're going to wait and see what the hue and cry is. And if enough people complain, they'll come out with this lame excuse like, oh, it was a mistake. It was a coding error, and everything's okay again now.
Well,
you know, and then it'll work.
Could be.
But no, they needed to test the water somehow.
Yeah. An issue that I know is on Windows 10 as well as Windows 11. So it's something that they're going to have to go ahead and address quickly. It's like I said, I do think it's going to bite them in the butt. I really do.
It should be interesting.
Yeah. So, speaking of other problems with Windows, Larry, you've been looking at different kinds of laptops, and one of the ones that you've been looking at is the Surface Laptop 4 15-inch, and you're having sleep issues.
Well, yeah, I was. Now I'm not, but let me clarify this just a little bit. I thought initially it was just limited to just the 15-inch. Mm-hmm. Recently, I did buy a 15-inch Surface Laptop Pro, and before I even go there, before somebody hammers me, I know you can buy a lot more laptop, a lot more features, a lot less money. But honestly, to me, the Surface Laptop 4 is about as close as Windows PC is ever going to get to a MacBook Pro. That thing is solid. It's beautiful. I love the 3:2 aspect display. I wish to God everybody would start making those. They're amazing. They're just wonderful. It's got a wonderful keyboard on it. As I said, the display. But it had this problem when I first set it up, the sleep and display off modes were both set to 10 minutes. And I said, well, we'll see what happens at 10 minutes. Well, 10 minutes, it dutifully went off. 4 seconds later, it came back on. Hello, Windows would look at me, blink a couple of times. It would try and come on. It came on, and then it would go to sleep in 10 minutes, come back on. So I set this down to 1 minute just so I could see how I could really, you know, see what it was doing. It just kept doing it. It would not fix itself. So I said, well, I'm going to Best Buy, looked at 4 or 5 models they have on the floor down there and put those in the same mode. They did it too. So this wasn't just my machine. This is a problem with this machine. And so I Googled around, found some similar issues, found a lot of people complaining about it way before me. But nothing came up as a true solution. There were some issues some things that drove me to look around and try things. And what I ultimately discovered was if you go to control panel, go to power options, then go to the change when your computer sleeps, change advanced settings, and then click on expand PCI Express, and then expand links power management. Lastly, both battery and plugged-in will be set to moderate power savings or maximum. If you change this to off, obviously battery won't even have that if it's if you're not using a laptop, but then restart your computer, bingo, it's done. It's been 4 days now. I've made literally hundreds of tests. It works flawlessly. Why it's even a problem, I have no idea, but it absolutely is a problem. The thing I haven't done yet, because I don't have one here, I haven't tried this on a fingerprint laptop or a laptop without any kind of biometrics. I've only tried it on the Windows Hello machine. I don't know if it's related to the camera. I can't imagine it shouldn't be, but for whatever, 4 seconds after it goes to sleep, poof, it's looking at you saying, I want to wake up. And it's really no fun. I mean, it was irritating because you couldn't put the computer to sleep other than shutting the lid down and the display, and then it would, of course, go to sleep.
I find that interesting because I know both Chris and I have reported in the past mm-hmm. on previous Surface Pro models, we would take them, put them to sleep, and like throw them in a backpack. And then you look at your backpack later and it's hot because the thing has come on while it was in your backpack.
Right. Yep.
It didn't stay in sleep mode when it was closed and in your backpack. So, and that was going on for quite a while. I mean,
bag syndrome was a real problem there for a while.
Well, this all sounds very related, doesn't it?
Obviously an OS based issue, not a hardware thing.
Or a driver based issue. It's right. One of those kinds of things. But either way, it's interesting because it's very, very, very similar, except we don't have the Windows Hello as a possible trigger.
Well, the other thing that I tried a couple of laptops at Best Buy that were not Windows Surface products, and it did not occur with them. They work perfectly. So this has something to do with Windows Surface.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll put in the show notes the fix.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants it, they can have it.
Perfect. Perfect. And speaking of the Surface Laptop 4 15 inch, you're trying to choose between it and the Surface Pro 8 as a final destination Windows machine.
Yeah, final destination for my money. That's all it is. Yeah, right. You know, I thought this was going to be easy. I needed a new Windows machine. So I tried the one that I told you that was the Windows S, immediately took it back. And then I went to a Lenovo, tried that. And I got to say, Lenovo makes a really decent product. If you get something that's mid-range, you know, it's around $1,000 or so, you're going to get a good product. It's going to have a great keyboard, but it still felt plastic. It wasn't plastic. It was magnesium or aluminum or something, but it just didn't feel like that solid block of aluminum like a MacBook or like this Windows Surface Laptop Pro. So, you know, before I digress too much, I love this thing, and I'll say one more good thing about it. I've never used a Ryzen processor before to any degree. I've never owned one, I'll say that.
On the Surface Laptop 4 you're talking.
Right. I've got a Ryzen 7 in it, and it's blazing. This thing is amazing for what I do. If I had to do video editing, it would suck, I'm sure. But for the kind of use case that I have, it's a perfect. And then I've ultimately, after the fact, read that too. So it's a good processor. I know why now Microsoft added that to the line a few years back. But I probably digress too much. I was at Costco the other day, and I was playing around for a few minutes with this Surface Pro 8 that they had on display. It was all neatly bundled with a signature keyboard and a slim pen and with a substantial savings over normal street price. So it intrigued me, and I'm looking at it, playing with it. And it only took me a few minutes to start questioning my purchase of the Surface Laptop Pro. Had I made a mistake? Maybe I did. Maybe the Surface Pro, although it's a couple inches smaller, the keyboard is not nearly as good. But then again, the display on that Surface Pro 8 is awesome. It is sweet. I mean, the 120 hertz makes it feel like my iPad Pro.
Oh, it's like butter.
Oh, it's like butter. It really is.
It really
and
is.
And about that time, I could feel my hand start reaching for my wallet, and I was going to grab one of those little cards that you take up and pay for this thing. Mm-hmm. And it struck me right then why I really did not need this beautiful product, even though I wanted it. For me, it's more of a tablet. It looks like a tablet. It feels like a tablet. It smells like a tablet. And so for me, maybe not everybody, but for me, it must be a tablet. It can run Windows 11. It nicely doubles as a laptop. But I still think if you find yourself in this little quandary, and obviously I'm not the only one. A lot of people, if you Google this, millions of people are trying to make this decision, which Surface Laptop or Surface Pro. I think the question you need to ask yourself, do you want a tablet or do you want a laptop or do you want something that'll do both? And if you want a laptop, this is not your baby. It really isn't.
No, the Surface Pro is not lappable at all.
It can be both, but it feels. But if it feels like a tablet while you're playing with it, then go buy the laptop you really want because this won't work.
What's interesting to me, Larry? Sorry about that. What's interesting to me, Larry, is that I totally agree with you from a hardware perspective. This thing does not feel like a laptop. It feels like a tablet. But from an operating system perspective, I think it's one of the worst tablets out there. I think it's horrible.
Oh, no, I agree.
Horrible as a tablet.
That's why I said it runs 11 beautifully. I agree.
It's kind of the perspective you're coming from, right? Because I agree that physically, it really is very, it does not stand up well as a laptop. There are laptops that do a better job of being a laptop than that, as you said already. But as a tablet, it doesn't compare well as a tablet. So my question then becomes, as the market has changed, now we have the Surface Laptop Studio and we have the Go device, not the Go devices, the SE devices coming out and then the laptop devices that have done very well for Microsoft. One has to wonder, so the Pro line is starting to look a little bit, even with these improvements, it's starting to look a little...
Not Pro?
Well, are just not necessarily.
But isn't the Surface Pro still their biggest seller in the Surface line?
I'm sure it is. But you know what's happened is they've gotten a cash in the business market now, so right. they're selling quite a few of them through that market now because of the reputation they had gotten previously. You know that always takes a while for that momentum to sort of catch up, right? So it's still got a lot of name value going behind it. But I don't think the 8. I mean, I do think the 120 screen is nice and all that kind of things. But they took some things away from the 8 as well that were in the 6 and 7.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
They did. Like for example, the SD card's gone. The micro SD is gone. There's no slot for it anymore.
Which is a huge mistake. Mistake.
Well, if you're trying to take the tablet around as a creator device, yeah, that actually is.
Because it's only micro SD.
I can get a terabyte and have a terabyte micro SD cards out there. And it's a quick and easy way of making a storage upgrade to your device.
Fair point.
Stretching out the life of that particular device for just
absolutely. A few years longer. So it makes me kind of go, well, okay, I get what they're thinking is, but I think the device, in some ways, isn't the destination that it used to be. You know,
Understand.
All right. I'll tell you one reason why I bought mine is, and I'm a firm believer, especially when you have a corporate job like myself, maintaining. I don't use my work laptop for anything but work, and I don't use my personal stuff for work mostly. Occasionally I'll like pull a file over there and just try something over on that just to make sure, or load a link on there just to make sure it's working. But the big reason I bought mine is when I'm traveling for work, which hasn't happened in 2 years, but when I'm traveling for work, if I want to take my personal machine with me, the Surface Pro works. Now, granted, iPads can work too in that kind of a situation. Like get an iPad Pro, and that can work as your personal machine, as long as you picked up like the keyboard or something like that. You know, then you can do that. But
and that's what I
like. Right. And the thing that I like about the Surface Pro, though, is I can run Creative Cloud on it. It could run better, but, you know, it does. I can edit video on it, and I do edit video on it. It's a little slow for that, mostly because it doesn't have anything but an Intel graphic card. But but it's just nice to take that. Actually, sometimes I'll take both that and my iPad, just because the iPad's a great consumption device. So,
you know, Chris G made a good point. He and I were chatting today about this a little bit. I was thinking maybe I could still go ahead and get it and then maybe get rid of my M1 iPad Pro and still have something I could lightweight that I could take on the road. And after I explained my use cases to Chris, he said he disagreed with my thought process and said, actually, because he and I both have the iPad Pro. And he said, I think you're going to like what you're doing now with the iPad better, unless you have to do Microsoft apps exclusively or a lot of heavy Excel work. Because I got to tell you, Microsoft 365 apps on an iPad just are horrid. They're just awful. That's all they're adequate, but they're not the same.
If you're just doing the basics, that's fine.
Right. Well, if you got to read a spreadsheet, but if you got to work on one, it's different.
Right. I agree.
Chris S, isn't that a favorite topic of yours?
Oh my God, yes. So,
and I would add to that what Joel just said too. The Adobe Creative Suite is another one that it isn't nearly what it ought to be on the iPad at this point. No. So in that case, that might be another reason to go down that path. But I found that for me, if the iPad wasn't sufficient for what I needed to do, I carry it when I'm on call. I carry it when I'm traveling. And I tend to, use my VPN connection in the office, and then I run Microsoft Remote Desktop and connect into whatever I needed to connect to meet those extra needs. And that's perfectly okay for me.
So, agree. But I don't think Larry has a Windows desktop sitting around just waiting to be
the conversation he and I were having was very specific on his use case. Yeah. So and in his use case, that really wasn't the necessity.
I mean, like, I do stuff like I use Pixelmator Pro instead of Photoshop for a lot of photo stuff.
Exactly, me too.
And I'm a heavy user of it. But man, on an M1 Mac, that thing is 100,000 times better than Photoshop. But I don't think that it would work on an iPad as well as it does on my Mac. I might be wrong, but
it works really well. It's gotten very good reviews on the iPad.
I keep thinking that, I got the smaller one and I'm space limited for anything except email and reading. And I don't know. I should have got the big one. I'm bad mistake.
Well, you'll keep us posted on what your final decision is, either Surface Pro 8 or Surface Laptop 4. I'm certain.
I will.
So we'll be looking to hear more of that maybe next time. But moving now to a couple of Apple centric related things. Man, I'll tell you this one. I knew that this was out there. I remember hearing something about this, and I believe it was during an Apple keynote, when they were introducing the AirPods Pro back just a little bit ago. But there is some extra shining light being put on this right now. I believe it was BGR that was calling it the iPhone hack that's currently blowing up TikTok. And it basically is the ability to use either the AirPods Pro or the AirPods 3s as a hearing aid device. You can use you can pick up ambient sound from across the room, if you will. And even better, if you were to be, as long as you're in range of your connected iPhone, you leave your iPhone say over there and you'll walk away, but still within range, You can listen in on conversation as long as your iPhone iPhone's microphone can pick it up. And I can see where this may cause a number of related issues with a lot of people.
I honestly think this, another thing they initially said about this was it was sort of developed it wasn't developed for this, but one of the uses for it was people who are hard of hearing in loud places or whatever, mm-hmm. could turn on their iPhone, just leave it in their pocket or on the table, put their AirPod Pros in and hear better. You know, have a better conversation or be able to hear people better.
Yes.
But I'm like you, Chris. This is going to go somewhere that Apple doesn't want it to go.
I agree. And as someone with enough of a hearing problem to have hearing aids, and I should wear them more often. I should
about the fourth divorce case, and this will be gone. This will be gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if this is any worse than having, you know, the smart speakers sitting around your house listening all day.
Well, make a point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's any worse. And if anything, it's better in the sense that at least it's directing to a device I own rather than some third party, something that I have no control over.
Yep. Yeah. Because the moment that Alexa tells me, while I'm having an argument with my wife, Alexa tells me that I'm wrong. I said this and didn't say that. That's it. She's out of here. You know?
Well, it's like now, and I see how this kind of evolutionized. Like, for example, I have had a pair of LG Tone Freeze, which are LG's buds, until I went to go pull the cushion off and the whole thing split apart. So I'm like, yay.
Oh, dear.
But I bought and replaced them with a pair of Jabra Elite 3s because that's pretty much the only thing I can find that was close enough that wasn't skull candy. Not that there's anything wrong. I actually have a pair of skull candy Sashivos, and I like those too. But the nice thing about these and the LGs is that I can basically tell it I want to basically not close out the world, but hear the world too while I'm listening to my podcast. Okay. So the Jabra one actually works a little bit better than the LG version, but like I could actually hear people talking. As long as my podcast wasn't up in volume, I could probably hear people talking in the room with me. Just because it has that. And really the only thing different there is they added the amplification. So,
right, sure. I will tell you though that I was playing with this the other day, and it was very, very interesting. They the sound was very crisp, clear, and very, very directed into the hearing centers of my cortical, if you will. It did exactly what it said it was going to do. You know, you can stick your iPhone in your pocket and you're going to be, or leave it on the table in front of you. You ain't going to have any problems picking up conversations from across the house. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Was it all of the AirPod products or just certain ones?
I believe it was
just a general OS feature.
Pro no. and three only.
Yeah. Pro and three only is what I thought. And I do think that this was announced during the iOS 15 announcement recently. That's so. True.
I wouldn't doubt, but what it'll work with the Beats Pro as well, but
don't know. All I know is that it was just the Pros and the Threes that it was are supporting it now. So I
mean, kind of strange. It's only that, you know, but you know, okay.
Yeah, I would thought it was an OS feature, so it would be everywhere, but okay.
Yeah.
It may need the specific microphones in the Pros or the ear canceling in the Pros, or it may need some piece of specific hardware in the Pros or the Threes or whatever. I'm not sure. So, we'll see what happens with that. Apple though is bumping into a couple of other issues as far as some of the antitrust stuff that they're going through, some of the litigation that they're working through. They've been ordered to add third party payment systems to the App Store, and they have to get it done by December 9th. So they've got a little under 4 weeks as of this recording to go ahead and get that done and in.
Yep.
Thoughts, kids? Is this a good thing or is this a bad thing?
Well, I think it's a good thing because it's gonna like one thing I was never happy about is like the amount of cut that the app developers have to give the Apple Store. Now I get it. Apple wants to be able to run the store, right? And so they need a little bit of cash for that. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to like, for example, the game, like in-game purchases and stuff, there's no reason for Apple to get a cut of that, but they have to get a cut of that. You know, the way things are now. Now,
well,
the way things
if you went to Walmart and bought a copy of Monopoly, the credit card company's getting a slice of your
sale.
They are.
Yeah, they're getting 3%. Yeah.
So they're acting as a processor. Then, you know, on some level, they should get a cut. But right. The question really to me was not should they get a cut. I think the question was, yeah, how big a cut should that really be?
Right. That's exactly right. You know, it's like now, for example, because of this, it's difficult. Like when you want to go buy something, like in say you had the Play Store, not the Play Store. Play Movies or what? Google TV, I think they call it. Whatever the Google movie thing is now, because they've changed names on it too damn many times. But anyway, but when you're in that, you can't buy anything on your iPad. You can watch them on your iPad all day, but you can't buy anything. You can't buy anything in the Kindle app directly either. So right. I mean, that's just not right.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've read, and I don't have the narrative with me here, but what I've read, and it was spoken by and written by an attorney that works for Microsoft. I don't remember his name, but it was something, you know, this is going to take them a long time to figure out all the kinks of this thing. I mean, there's going to have to be guardrails and guidelines to protect kids and developers. And it's not that they don't want to do it, but they don't want to do it now, and they're being forced to do it by December 9th. And he's saying, like, yeah, well, we can do this, but it's going to take a lot more time than that. Right. That's what they're upset about.
Right. So, that lawyer's name was Mark Perry. And the quote that Cult of Mac pulled,
that's where I read it. That's where I read it. Cult of Mac. I get that news.
Cult of Mac pulled it was this will be the first time Apple has ever allowed live links in an app for digital content.
It's there you go.
Months to figure out the engineering, economic, business, and other issues. It is exceedingly complicated. There have to be guardrails and guidelines to protect children, to protect developers, to protect consumers, to protect Apple. And they have to be written into guidelines that can be explained and enforced and applied. All right. And unfortunately, these arguments did little to sway the judge and overseeing this case, and assuming that another stay of some kind isn't allowed, like you said, and like we've been saying, December 9th is the date that they've got to go ahead and get this.
Well, I think the hammer will fall. That's it. And they're just going to have to figure out how to survive until they get to the point this lawyer is trying to take them to.
Well,
I think they are filing an appeal. Are they not?
They
have appealed.
Oh, I thought there was one out there yet.
Yeah. So, but I could be wrong. You know, what's interesting though, a lot of folks are up in arms. I think it was back in late 2018 that Apple made a change in their guidelines to the store that cut their take of everything in half. Most of the developers that offer any kind of application in the store are now only required to pay a 15% tithe.
Got to be over $1 million.
Right. You have to be over $1 million in revenue a year in order to be charged 30%, which are really, I mean, only people like Epic, right? Like Niantic, like who does Angry Birds?
Rovio.
Rovio, right. Those folks, those are really the only ones that are going to really get hit with a lot of these. Now, the problem is for those folks, not only does Apple take a cut at 30% on the individual sale of the game, but it's also all of the in-app purchases. All right. And that's really where those folks really make their money. They don't make it on the sale of the app. They make it for the skins or the coins or the jewels or the whatever it is that you go ahead and you buy after you're in the game in order to enhance the gameplay. All right. And Apple's taken a cut at 30% on those larger accounts every time you go ahead and, you know, push that button. And that's where those folks are really having their problems. But it's really a very small community of developers that are really affected by this. Mm-hmm. So, and I believe that this is getting a lot of press, largely because A, it's Apple, B, 30% is a whole freaking lot of money. And B or C, those folks that are affected have an actual PR arm, or at least have the ability to make a lot of noise in the marketplace and mm-hmm. are calling attention to it. But that's just, I guess, just me.
Well, Chris, you'll find this interesting. I just Googled this. This is a fact. Right this minute, as we speak, there are 3,611 developers whose products gross over 1 million a year on the App Store.
How many? Say that number again. Say
3,611 developers right this minute.
And how many developers are active in the store?
Oh, I don't know. God.
Probably millions.
Millions.
Yeah. I think there are millions of developers.
But that's still a staggering number. I would have thought 20 or something, you know.
Well, I thought it was under 1,000, but that's interesting. Wow.
I mean, that's just a lot.
That marketplace is lucrative. And you know, and Apple makes money.
And Google's quietly sort of trying to pull back, because they have basically similar policies, and they've been trying to
they have 2,035 developers that make over
what's interesting is when you look at the dollars that flow through both of those stores, I mean Apple's like an order of magnitude above the Google store, even though there's way more Android devices out there. Mm-hmm. So yep. you know, let's follow the money. So of course Apple's going to have the bigger visibility, you know, in all of this.
As the former most valuable company in the entire planet. You know, I only say former because, like I said, Microsoft recently overtook them in terms of overall market cap value. It's real easy. I mean, they're Apple. I mean, nobody else in the world is Apple but Apple. All right. And they are the fickle finger of fate is always pointing at them. They've always got the limelight on them for one reason or another. All right. Whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether it's product related, whether it's COVID workplace related, not to stir the pot, but they're always in the news for something.
Right. So, Chris, here's your answer. There are now over 30 million registered developers in the App Store.
There you go.
Wow. Wow. Unbelievable.
There you go. But, you know, 3,000 is what? When you're 1%?
Not even that. No, a tenth of a percent or about a hundredth of a percent.
There you go.
Small number.
They're the ones that are making the most noise because they can. They've got the money to be able to go ahead and and make that kind of.
So, I'll go back to what I said earlier. I don't ever think that Apple shouldn't make a profit on this. They're a business. Absolutely. They're in it to make a profit.
Yeah.
I could argue that, you know, 30% is usury. I've certainly back 100 years ago, they would have called that kind of number usury. But, you know, back then you couldn't have anything like a credit line that charged that kind of percentage. But sure. Today, it's not unusual at times. Sure. So I don't know. I don't know how to judge it against today's market anymore.
Well, Apple can do this because it's the only landscape on the planet where you can get that kind of exposure for your products. And that's why they're doing it.
Sure, of course. And so I think that, but I'm not sure that opening the market to the third party payment structures is gonna be, and I get all the gotchas in that. I mean, all the challenges in making that happen. And you know, I've argued for a long, long time that the courts, and the government often make technical judgments without understanding the technology that they're making judgments about. And total so
truth. I agree.
They make decisions. So whether or not Apple should do this in the broader stroke is one conversation. Whether they should do it by December 9th is a different technical conversation. And clearly right. somebody in the courts does not understand what has to happen to make this do that. And unfortunately, if Apple's making the arguments, they're just sounding like they're whining. But the reality right. is it's a lot. I mean,
I
there's
agree.
A lot. It's a lot to do by December 9th.
I agree. I don't think it's as easy by far as easy as the court is thinking that it is. This is not something that they can just go ahead and snap in.
So, no, and they don't really understand the whole kind of sandboxy approach that Apple has taken in apps, which is part of what makes it less vulnerable to things.
I was just saying, as secure as it is.
And to punch holes in that, even if they're limited holes, you got to plan for that. You can't just it's randomly not something do that it.
You can just drop in. I have a feeling I wouldn't be surprised to be completely honest. I wouldn't be surprised if Apple found themselves in contempt, technically at least contempt, yep. And missing the December 9th deadline.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. That, yeah.
And just trying to explain to the court, you know, this is not us, willfully saying no. This is us telling you that technically it's not possible to do by the 9th.
Right. Well, I think one of the things that I find kind of abhorrent, at least in the mobile gaming area, is the fact that there's in a lot of ways there's no way to just buy the freaking game and just play the whole game.
Yeah, the whole micropayments thing just drives me crazy.
Yep.
The whole,
well, not just that is it's like sometimes there's like sometimes the game's free and that's it. Free, but then every other, like if you finish every level, there's freaking ad, for another game. It's like, no, I mean, well, and I go into the store, and like a good example here is I found, actually this isn't a game, but I found in the Android app store something very similar to the shortcuts on iOS. All right. Kind of like called links shortcuts or something like that, I think was the name of it in the app store. And the kind of the nice thing was it let you link, like deep link into the app. Like for example, you could put a link on your home screen that takes you directly to the Facebook code generator. So if you have MFA turned on your Facebook account, and you should, you can actually just get to it really easy without having to hit the app first and then go hunting for it. All right. And things of that nature too. So it was kind of like shortcuts, but not as powerful, I think, in my opinion. But there's ads in it, tons of ads in it in a utility app, which is just like, no, stop. I'm like, okay, I like this app. Can I go and pay for it? I go looking through the store. I can't find a way to pay for it to take the friggin' ads out. And that's my problem. So
well, I personally hate how they've taken a lot of what used to be mainstream games and turned them into ongoing revenue generators. And that whole model that has kind of befallen mobile gaming. And let's face it, both Google and Apple have taken advantage of it as well, by leveraging their cut of the payments. But I think the game developers have done us a disservice with this model. They've done themselves a big service, but I think for the rest of us, not giving us purchase once options is disappointing, to say the least.
Speaking of games and money, I got to share this one with you. I just left-handedly saw it looking at something else, but I had no idea. Y'all want to take a guess at how many dollars are spent on games annually in the Apple App Store? Just take a wild guess.
Billion.
$5.3 billion annually.
I was going to say more.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me.
Wow. Yep.
Yeah, and that's not your 4 or 5 year old sitting there buying
no,
buying
no,
jewels
no.
or coins or whatever or whatever the in-app currency is.
That's hardcore gamers. You know, Chris Sperry, you and I had this conversation one Sunday afternoon. The technology gaming gene missed me. I don't know how it did, but I've never had a desire. I've tried and tried. It does nothing for me. And you said you were somewhat similar.
I can't make my hands move like that.
Yeah. I know, but when you look at, I think the way our conversation started was you open up the App Store on whatever device you have, it doesn't matter. And you're just hit in the face with game after game after game after game. You never see anything for utilities until you dig for it. It's all games because that's where the money is.
I would say it's not just games, it's ongoing monetization. I mean, everybody's moving to subscription models. Everybody's moving to
you
know, these ongoing. And I get there some of the stated reasons for doing it. But as a consumer, there are times I just want the version that I want. Sell it to me. And down the road, sell me an update, but don't make me subscribe to it. That's one of the things I think I dislike the most about Adobe's products. And I prefer some of these other ones that compete with them because I don't want to have to be forced into a subscription. I don't want to be tied to it.
And a lot of developers are thinking just like that. And they're starting to more of them are starting to offer up a one-time, a lifetime subscription where you just get a new version every time. And man, they are making money hand over fist. I have a developer friend that just started that. His subscription model is $19 a year. His one-time cost is $59.95. And he just got rich overnight the minute he turned that on an app store, just like that.
And I think I'm with what Joel said. If I could just turn off the ads or turn off the ongoing monetization, I would be willing to pay, you know, a year, two years, 3 years worth just to not have to put up with it again.
Right.
Just to.
Or why do you have like here? I have a video editor on the Android that I use called PowerDirector, which is actually very, very powerful for a mobile video editor. It's not as powerful as what's the one on iOS, LumaFusion, I think. Of course, that's not the video editor. I don't know. I'd have to actually, I have it on my iPad. I just have to go. My iPad's downstairs. So, it's $5 a month. For the gaming aspect, I just tried this once just to see what it was like. Ingress Prime. So I do play Ingress from time to time. They got a monthly subscription called Ingress Prime Core. That's $5 a month. Google One, which is the 200. I have 200 gigabyte for backing up my phone. And then Tile, because my Sesh Evos actually have a Tile built into it, so I can find them, which is kind of cool. But that's $3 a month. And then this is the one I don't understand, and I actually just canceled it because I stopped using it. But there is a 3D print utility called Octoprint, where basically you install it and set it up on a Raspberry Pi. Well, you can use that Raspberry Pi, but you can use a PC too. And you can control your, and basically I can send a G-code to my 3D printer over a browser or from within an app. But there's an app called OctoApp that was 99 cents a month. And I'm like, wait, can't I just give you guys like 10 bucks and forget the stupid subscription? You know, I get that they're trying to have an ongoing source of revenue, but, you know, it gets to be ridiculous for some things, you know.
You know what? They're counting on the users who are willing to pay that because they absolutely can't live without the app. I'm a prime example. I pay the awful, outrageous subscription price for Fantastical because I think it's the best damn calendar ever created, period. But it just works for me. But I'll pay that horrible price, and others will too.
And I pay monthly Microsoft Office fee, you know.
Yep. Me too.
And I guess I guess it's better than being the product, which you are in the case of Google and some of the other stuff. But,
you're right, Joel.
But at the very minimum, though, Elite, I tell you what, though, even though we are the product with Google products, at least they don't freaking slam ads to in your they do in your email, but they're not horrible.
No,
you know,
I rarely get them. Rarely,
right? Right. But they're not horrible. You know, and that's one thing I'll give for Google. Like, you might be reading through every one of my emails, but at least you're not shoving ads at me constantly.
Unless you're using a Chrome browser.
Yeah, if they're reading through
there is AdSense. So, but I mean, you know, but it's just, you know, I'm like, yeah, it's like I was watching something on History Channel's app. Okay, yeah, Pawn Stars, it's guilty pleasure. the ads in there are actually horrible because they'll show you the same ad three times in one show.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, if I didn't click on your ad on the link and you get, and they're, oh, quote unquote, interactive ads, whatever. That just means they have links in them. So like, if I didn't click on the link the first time, do you think I am going to do it the next two times? No, I just want to watch the show. I'm like, I would love it to just throw $5 at History and say a month even and say, hey, just give me the shows. You know,
I don't have the link to the too.
And don't have the link to the stupid cable TV systems either, but because I don't have cable TV either. But yeah, it's just like, you know, yeah, that is one case where subscription makes sense, but for some apps it just doesn't make sense, you know. But I guess you got to make money, so whatever.
So. I just think it gets lopsided. I mean, I have a single user subscription to Microsoft 365. Costs me $90 a year, or $60-$70 a year, maybe. And I pay the same thing for a calendar. Come on. I mean, look at the two apps. They're just night and day. But yet we do it.
Well, at least with the Office subscription, we're able to justify it with the ongoing storage that we get.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No.
Yeah.
No.
I think terabyte storage from OneDrive. Oh my goodness.
I think it's cheap, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Office. It is. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Although I do wish they'd include Vizio, but that's neither here nor there.
Oh, don't even.
Started.
Don't get me started. I mean, honest to goodness, the show is going to end here in a few minutes, and now it'll go on for 3 days.
Oh, you're not going to talk about Felix the Cat, Chris?
Oh, you mean not Felix the Cat.
What's his
talking
name?
Talking Cat.
Copycat guy. The
Oh.
The one you spun up about with Snipping Tool.
Yeah. Remember? Is it Leroy?
Leroy Jenkins?
No.
He looks like Felix. So,
back in the day, Earl. Back in the day, a little while ago, long story short, not to get stuck on this, but Microsoft was making some noise about having Clippy come back. Teams related
teams
help related, hey, it looks like you're trying to do this, you know, kind of thing, which is what they kind of did with back in the day with Microsoft Office 96 and 97 and I believe it died in 98 with Office 98, but I'm a real big Bloom County fan. And Clippy, I just found completely annoying. And there were a couple of other sort of characters that they would allow you to download manually and install. One of them was a dolphin. The other one that kept on continually coming to mind was a blue colored cat. And this was a mangy sort of Bill the Cat kind of character. And he was absolutely just it's just hilarious. You could sit there. I could sit there and every now and again, he'll go ahead and throw his face on the ground and you hear the clang like a frying pan hitting somebody on the back of the head or something. And it's absolutely the funniest thing. And it made Office or at least
entertaining. You know?
Well, I remember people trying to find the conditions that would make him do certain things too.
Yes.
Because he would just, some of the things he would do were just really outrageous.
Absolutely. And, you know, nobody wants Clippy. I mean, no. Kids, nobody wants Clippy. That he is just the most annoying and irritating, but Earl was freaking hilarious.
Yep.
So
when then he got Rover too, the dog.
Yep.
Yeah, but Rover wasn't hilarious the way Earl was.
No. And there was another cat called Lynx, from what I understand as well. Mm-hmm. But long and the short of it, this was absolutely hilarious. Mm-hmm. So I don't want Clippy, I want Earl.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's kind of the major content here for the week, kids. I want to go ahead and give us a brief second. If you've got your picks, kids, fire them up, because let's go ahead and talk about our picks of the week. Joel, you had one. I know you had one.
Yes, I do. A lot of people, even on Linux, people would install VirtualBox. Well, you don't have to do that. You don't have to install the Oracle Evil that VirtualBox is, because they own them now. But you can install KVM stands for Kernel of Virtual Machine on Linux, and you can install that in a combination with QEMU, which is an emulator on top of Linux, and even have the associated with that. Unfortunately, I have one link which will work for Ubuntu that I'll give you for the show notes.
Okay.
But it doesn't tell you how to install the virtual machine manager. But basically, you just go into the App Store on Linux, on the Ubuntu Linux, and you can install it. Okay. And basically, it's very similar to how either VirtualBox or VMware would be. You get a nice graphical setup, boot off, you create the virtual machine, boot off the ISO, and install Linux distributions. Or I haven't ever tried it for Windows, but I bet you it would work.
I would love to see if it would work with Windows. That would be interesting to see if that could happen. Or maybe even Mac OS.
And by the way, folks, this is FREE.
See, that was my next question.
Yes. Both in cost as well as in freedom, as in it's open source. Sure. So you can install it and for no cost at all. There's actually there's other like more enterprise level tools for virtualization on top of Linux, I'm trying to remember the other one. Zen hypervisor is one that's useful, especially for the enterprise level. But for just using like firing up and trying multiple Linux distributions on top of your Linux distribution, just because you don't want to dedicate your Linux machine to a specific Linux distribution, you can do that. So, I mean, that's the nice thing about it. And there's a complete, the nice thing too, though, is if you don't want the graphical stuff, the graphical interface, the virtual machine manager application out of the Ubuntu store, it's useful. But like, if you're just booting up, like say you set up a LAMP stack, Linux, Apache, and MySQL, or I guess you could say MariaDB, either one, or and PHP, so you can mess around with PHP code, but you can do that in the KVM, and you can boot that in the background with the command line, and that way you don't have to have like a window with it running. Then you can just access it via your web browser on the same machine. So I mean, so that way you can do more development on there and not risk your daily driver OS. So
nice.
But that's just one of the many reasons why you might run a virtual machine. Like, for example, I haven't ever tested it with Windows yet, but if you had the ISO, you can probably try and install it, and I bet you it would probably work. But actually try to think, I might have tried Windows XP at one point, because I have the Windows version of MechWarrior 2, one of my all-time favorite PC games. And I couldn't get it to work. It will not work on Windows 10. I tried, I tried it in the KVM. I tried it in VirtualBox too, and didn't really work too well. So it's just one of these days, I'm hoping good old games or good old games is probably the one I'm thinking that would do it. Occasionally they will go in and take the old game and port it so that it will run right on Windows 10, which is kind of nice. But that way, you can probably, like, if you really wanted to try Windows 11 and you're a Linux user, so that you can make fun of it, you know, try loading Windows up in there. I don't know how well Windows 11 worked, but Windows 10 would probably be fine. So, but sure, that's my pick. It's a handy one if you use Linux and you haven't looked at the virtualization stuff that's free on Linux, you should.
I'm going to try that. Thank you.
Yep. Cool.
And speaking of Larry giving things a shot there, Larry, how about your pick of the week?
Before the pick of the week, Joel happened to mention Windows XP. And I know I'm dating myself, but God, I miss that operating system. I really do.
Well, it was around for 15 years.
It was a good one. Oh, well. We just can't, nothing stays around forever.
Nope.
Hey, while you guys were all out writing for Gear Diary back in the day and all those other rags like that, I was the guy that bought all that crap. I was the guy that just had to have every new bag that came out. I always wanted to keep my stuff nice, so I always wanted to protect it. In fact, I think sometimes Toomey would have went out of business if it wouldn't have been for me, but probably not. I think they did go out of business, maybe. Anyway,
I'm right there with you, Larry.
you do the same thing?
I do.
I don't know, but that was back when I first met Chris and I was traveling a lot with Wagnet. I always wanted a cool bag that was protective.
Imelda Marcos had her shoes. I had my bags, my computer.
Yeah,
bags.
That's right. And you know, if I drop something, I want it to be more than pretty. I want it to actually work, you know. And about, I think, 2017, there was a company that hit Amazon named TomTalk, TOMTOC. And their sole purpose in life, so they said, was they were going to start selling the absolute best bags for computers and other gear, similar gear that ever were made, and they were going to be protective and they were going to be reasonably priced. And today they are one of the biggest sellers on Amazon, and they make bags for everything, every color, flavor, size, whatever. And they do a great job, and they're all cheap. I mean, so for my M1, now that the pandemic's loosening up a little bit, I'm going to start trying to travel a little bit more. I said, I got to have something to put this M1 iPad Pro in. And, you know, it's kind of a small thing. It doesn't warrant its own bag, but yet it does, because if it drops, I don't want to have to, you know, shell out another $1,200-$1,400. So I got to looking and I found this thing from TomTalk made specifically for this iPad. And it's called the Portfolio Case. On the outside, it's kind of a hard product. It's a lot like that black nylon ballistic. In fact, this stuff actually has a mill standard with it, which it is that stuff. So, you know, it anything external, it's just going to protect it. You can't cut it. It's just, it's still soft to touch to a degree. It fits this iPad Pro so well. I mean, it's just $30, $30 lifetime guarantee. And it's got a 5 foot, I think a 10 time drop rating, 5 foot, and it won't hurt a thing. It just won't do it. I'm not going to try that, but it's nice to know. And I don't normally, you know, I usually want to talk about software or geeky stuff, but this, I mean, this is just really a cool bag. I got it finally this morning and from Amazon. I ordered the wrong one inadvertently, but this one finally came and I'm ready for my first road trip, because this is one cool bag. And it's got the YKK zipper system on it. For those of you, Chris, I know you know what that
yep.
is.
Yep.
Those are so nice. I mean, and they're not like the cheap YKK knockoffs that roll up around themselves on one side, not the other, but these are immaculate. They just work perfectly. So if you're looking for a case for your iPad or for your anything, really, look for the name TomTalk and then go to the TomTalk store on Amazon. and just filter for your product, and it'll show you everything they make for your product, and you can pick and choose the type, color, size, and whatever. That's it. That's all I got.
Nice. Well, I will tell you, it's for my pick of the week. I was struggling for something this week because, you know, I hadn't been, nothing new has crossed the desk in a while. And that's probably a good thing for me, to tell you the truth. But I was looking here at my iPhone, desperately trying to turn the doggone thing off while it rang during the middle of the show. But I've got a custom leather case on this thing from Bullstrap.co. They are a purveyor, if you will, of custom leather cases, specifically for iPhone. They've also got some other kinds of gear. They've got some MagSafe wallets or some MagSafe other kinds of add-ons for their cases. They've got coverings for air tags. They've got a backpack or two, something for the charger. They've got some cables, etc. And I'll tell you some of the, but these things are really, really nice. I had, let's see, last year for Christmas, I bought Michelle, my wife Michelle, and I, new brand new iPhone 12 Pro Max phones. We were due for an upgrade for Christmas, and I wanted something really nice, and because I got us the new, at the time, the new ocean blue color, and Bullstrap makes a ocean blue leather case. It's got a lifetime warranty. I had originally or recently dropped it and got a little nick on one corner and then on the edge of the case where the leather was coming up. I took a couple of pictures, filed a claim, and uploaded the pictures with Bullstrap. They took one look at it, said, yep, that qualifies for a lifetime warranty. And they sent me a brand new leather case for this thing. It is MagSafe compatible. My phone is never really out of it. I just stick it on my, I've got a nice MagSafe car kit, compatible car kit, just kind of stick that thing on there and boom. It works without a hitch. And the nice thing about it is they say, you know, with MagSafe leather cases for especially from Apple, you get that MagSafe ring, that wear ring where the leather or the material actually lightens. It ain't doing that. And it didn't do that. I had the other one before it was before I filed the warranty claim on it. I had it for almost a year or more, and it never showed wear on the back either. So this thing is really, really nice. It's a little bit on the pricey side. But to be very, very honest, protects the case very, very well. And I am very, very pleased with the case. They're also in the process of pulling together cases for the iPhone 13 line. So I was very, very pleased with the case. I believe that the case that I purchased is for the Pro Max. I believe it is going, it's just $79. All right. A little bit pricey for a case, but it's been well worth it. It's protecting the device.
It's not out of line. Apple's pricing is similar.
Yeah, Apple gets $50 for a rubber case. Come on.
Yeah, that's true. But even still, you know, it matches the original color of the phone very, very well. So it's very distinctive. It's very nice. So, and it's got that new car smell. So, so bullstrap.co. They've got some really nice things there. Was able to go ahead and get a nice leather case and cover for my AirPods Pro to match to match the case that I've got. So it's pretty sweet. So, but I guess that's it for our show this week. I am Christopher Spera, and for Larry McJunkin, Joel McLaughlin, and Christopher Cavula, I want to thank you for tuning in to the iTech Gear Weekly episode number 5. It's not S mode.